Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. I hope you're well. I am here with my good buddy, Doomberg. He just came out with an article today called "The Riches Are in the Niches." And you guys know darn well, I'm really adamant about encouraging 1,000 people to go out there and create their own content, whether it's a blog, whether it's on Substack or YouTube channel, a podcast, whatever we can do to really encourage others to create content around freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. I think that's how we're going to be able to push back on the authoritarians. And Doomberg is doing that and doing it extremely well. So I wanted to have him on to go over his recent article. And then what we're going to do is take a couple phone calls from you guys so you can ask him questions directly. And the link is right there in the chat. So if you guys want to get in the queue to ask us a couple questions here in about 15 minutes, go ahead and click that link and Josh will handle it. But prior to us hitting the live button here, Mr. Berg, we were discussing the how it helps you out for the people who look at this blog post that we're going to look at in a second, or people who read this, to hit the like button so others can determine the quality of the content. And I just got done doing a video, a live stream, where I was talking about how YouTube took away the count number on the dislike button specifically so you could not tell the quality of the content. And what this does is they said they did it for small creators, which is complete BS, because that's the only edge a small creator has. The reason they did it is because every time CNN or MSNBC or Jim Cramer or the World Economic Forum, whenever they post a video on YouTube, the like ratio is like 10%. It's terrible because people think the video sucks or the content sucks. And it's obvious that YouTube is just trying to take away that information to funnel more of the average Joe and the average Jane into this content, which is basically pure propaganda. So before we start, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and before I even give you those thoughts, I want to thank you for having me on again. Always a pleasure to chat with you. You're a good friend and a fellow content creator. Very generous with your time, and I always appreciate it and appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience in this platform, which is new for me and kind of cool. I didn't know this existed, and you mentioned it last time I was on your main show, and this is kind of fun that we can just go through this article together and chat about it and take questions. So thanks for that. And yeah, it is a really, I think it's part of a disturbing trend that we're seeing. And the whole point of the piece we put out today is actually comparing Substack to YouTube and some of the pluses and minuses. And there is certainly a trend, you know, and they always cover it with it stops online harassment. And nobody's denying that online harassment is a thing and that it's a damaging thing for the people that receive it. But there is just this amazing trend. Like, you, it's same with the White House videos. You know, they were throttling the dislike button on that as well. At least they've taken it all away, and now we all know what it's really about. But it is a pretty remarkable thing to see. And you often wonder in history, you know, how did societies react as their freedoms were slowly taking away? And people will say, oh, this isn't about freedom, and YouTube is a private company, and they can do what they want. These companies are big. These companies are impactful. These companies are controlling the phenomenon we're going to talk about today, which is the decentralization of entertainment and education. And so it's not like it's just some random movie theater that doesn't want you to go on their property. The Google, YouTube, and Twitter, and Facebook are dominant monopolies in a critically important public sphere of the future, which is online social media. And so it is, you know, it's always a little cut here and a little chip there and a little cut here and a little chip there. But the arrow is always in a certain direction, which is more centralized control, less tolerance for diverging views, and more snuffing out of unfavorable opinions.
Dissenting views. So that's why it's so important, guys, for you to use this YouTube platform while you can to grow your own audience, create your own content, and then bring them over to Substack or Odyssey or Rumble or any of the other platforms. Make sure you got diversification there. Probably the best thing is your email list, and maybe we'll get into that in just a moment. But Mr. I don't know whether to say Mr. Berg or Mr. Doomberg.
You could just call me Doomberg. That'd be great.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's go over to the article you did post today.
Looking at a mirror with the mirror behind you there for a second. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go through this. I've got it pulled up. And yep. If you want to tell sure. me kind of the main talking points, I can highlight that for the audience. We'll sure. go ahead and increase the view so everyone can see this.
Why don't I start with why we do this? So we've started Doomberg Substack 7 months ago. And one of the things we decided to do from month one was completely open the books on our metrics and how we're doing and to share with our audience what's working and what's not working so that we can learn, we get feedback, and we could share the journey with them. And so this is the November report for the work of my life, which is what these pieces used to be called. But we've since added a more catchy title on top of it because as a content creator and the first lesson I will tell people that's producing content, titles really matter. And if you get if you get a catchy title, you could get a lot more play. We like to start our pieces with a story. You know, if you read the book Talk Like Ted, starting with a story is always is a great way to start. And here we're telling the story of our second favorite YouTuber behind the great George Gammon, Steve Wallace, who is he's got a really fascinating YouTube channel. He's got 745,000 subscribers.
Wow.
He's got 107 million total views. And all he does is this amazing genre, a subset of a niche, which is camping videos on YouTube are surprisingly popular.
Yeah.
He's got a subset of camping called urban stealth camping, where he kind of pretends to hide and camps in parking lots and in woods behind a police station. And so like if you go down, but see his number one video has 7.6 million views, George. It's incredible. This is his second most downloaded video, U-Haul stealth camping. And he's an everyday guy. He's a charismatic guy. He's authentic. He's got this deadpan sense of humor that is delivered so perfectly when you watch it. And, the opening quote says, I honestly don't know why people watch. Well, we know why people watch because we know why we watch. And we watch because he's authentic. He's funny. He's consistent. He's likable. And we then sort of pivot into talking about the brand and what a brand actually means. And so
in the niche, let's make sure that's their main takeaway. So guys, if you're thinking about creating a YouTube channel, I think the more you can niche down or just a blog or a podcast, the more you can niche down, the better to a certain degree. So when I started the George Gammon channel, as an example, it's not just about finance. It's about specifically macroeconomics and seeing that through the lens of Austrian economics.
Exactly.
And so just this gentleman, Steve, didn't just do camping videos. He did camping where he's in these crazy kind of urban areas and doing it in a way that's completely incognito.
Exactly. And this concept has a name. It's called micro influencers. And now he's very macro. You've got 750,000 subscribers and you're averaging 400,000 views a week for the past 10 videos that I looked briefly before writing that piece. But you can have an incredible influence in your niche if you have 5,000 loyal followers with high engagement. And so if you do a YouTube channel about a certain style of motorboat, everyone on the planet that loves that kind of motorboat is going to sign up to your YouTube. And suddenly the people in that business are going to be interested in you as an influencer. So
or another thing, if you guys wanted to do content around freedom and liberty, maybe your thing is the Constitution.
Exactly.
So you do videos or blog posts or have a podcast that just revolves entirely around the Constitution, or maybe state nullification, that's an example of what Doomberg is talking about here.
Yeah, exactly. And so the riches are in the niches. If you know something well, you do something well. And like we talked about when I was fortunate enough to be interviewed on your main channel, the barrier to entry to do a Substack is zero, but the barrier to entry to do a good one is high. And we're trying to teach and share and learn from our audience together as we go through this crazy journey. And so that's sort of the purpose of these Work of My Life pieces. And we like to point out content creators that are doing it very, very well and why we think they're doing it well. And then also in this piece, as we'll get to a little later, we also point out a few risks that Steve Wallace is taking by being so concentrated on one platform,
right?
Like you alluded to.
So I'm looking at a quote here. It's a brand is a person's gut feeling. Can you go over this?
So Steve Wallace has a brand. He might not know it. He might not. It might not even be on purpose, although it probably is. But a brand is not a logo. It's not a corporate identity, and it's not a product. A brand is a person's gut feeling. That logo, the corporation, or the product induces. And so Steve Wallace's brand, when YouTube notifies me that Steve's Thursday video is out and I get my notification, it induces a smirk on my face.
Yeah.
And a sort of sensation of pleasure, easy entertainment. It's going to be a half hour long. I'll digest that later tonight. It's something I get to do when I'm done with whatever I have to do with my children or whatever I have to do for our business or whatever it is that I have to do. I get to sit down and watch Steve's latest crazy adventure. That's a brand. That's a valuable brand. And corporations would pay millions of dollars to have such a brand. Yeah. And so the next thing we say in the piece is we congratulate him and we hope that he can, take advantage of this brand for himself and not just for Google, YouTube.
I'm looking at Josh here. I'm trying to think of what feeling my brand induces. Probably stiff drink time.
No, I would say I'm going to get a high energy, informative lesson on something I probably don't know enough about, but I should.
And while I'm doing it, afterwards, I'm definitely going to have a stiff drink.
Exactly. But, the real important takeaway here, which is the quote under the quote, which is brand is what they say it is, not what you say it is. And this is really, really key for a content creator. We think a lot about brand. People make fun of the green chicken, but we love the brand and the name Doomberg and the green chicken. And this was all thoughtful. One of the partners in my firm developed this brand. And on their own, and it's brilliant. We love it. And one of the things about marketing for a new content creator, it's hard to stand out if your brand is yourself if you don't have a pre-existing social media following. And so you almost have to create a brand from scratch with a catchy name and a good logo. That's not what the brand is. Those are attributes that help you convey your brand message to the receivers. But you can't be remembered if you don't stand out.
How important is authenticity to your brand?
It is the single most important. And in fact, the reason that we do these pieces is because we want it to be totally transparent and authentic with our audience about why we're doing this, how we're doing this. We've discussed openly when and how we'll monetize, if we ever do monetize, why we would want to monetize. We're treating this like a business, which is another key message, which is the decentralization of entertainment and education is leading to a massive change in the way people consume and a massive change in the way people work. And if you're authentic enough and skilled enough and prolific enough and work at it hard enough and then learn the skills of doing it better and better and better, you can make a living as a content creator. And we think that trend is huge. And as we'll see with the revenue data from YouTube alone, it's growing remarkably well, and so is Substack. And so we think we've caught an early part of this train, and we intend to treat the Doomberg Substack with the exact same professionalism and business acumen and learning instincts and mistake management and tough criticisms from people we respect, that every time we put a piece out, what do you think, what could we do better, we're going to treat Doomberg in the exact same way we would treat any other line of our other business in the real world, quote unquote.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's like the opposite of what I do. It just makes me realize how lazy I am.
Oh, that's not true.
I just get out there and just talk about whatever I want to talk about. But that I always do tell people that you got to be yourself. At the end of the day, the viewer can see right through that if you're trying to pretend to be something you're not. That's why, when I started doing those macro videos on repo, I would laugh a lot. I wasn't trying to do that. I'm just being myself. And because even if people don't like it, that's fine. That's not your tribe.
Exactly. Anyway,
you're just trying to bring people into your community and your audience that are going to resonate with your message and resonate with your own personality. And those are the people that you're really going to affect in a positive way. And especially if your goal, like mine, is to get society off the road to serfdom and on the road to freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism, it's better to really have a huge impact on 5,000 people than to have just kind of an impact or just a glancing blow at 100,000.
Yeah. And look, there's a difference between marketing and gimmick marketing.
Right.
And marketing, we have a definition for marketing, which is the consistent expression of your brand vision through as many channels as you can find. That's what marketing is. But it has to be a consistent expression of your brand vision through those channels. And gimmick marketing might work for one part of the content creator formula, which is the numbers. But it's never going to give you the engagement that you need. And the ultimate value of your content creation business is the combination of the number of people who see it times the engagement. And those two things are two critical parts. And gimmick marketing leads to low engagement numbers. And it would be more consistent with a brand of a used car salesman, so to speak. You know, that.
Yeah, right.
But to be fair, if you created a niche around a character that is a used car salesman, it would be on brand to use gimmick marketing as a wink, wink joke. And then you would get both in that case. You know, I'm just thinking on the fly. But if somebody came to us and said, I want to create an anonymous character that is a used car salesman and cheesy and funny in that way, then in that case, gimmick marketing would be great. But if you are creating a serious Substack, or in your case, you know, you always want to find the line. Look, you have to promote yourself. It's a noisy field. There's tons of creators. The barrier to entry is zero. And so you do have to stand out. And then the last piece on marketing versus gimmick marketing is, if you do get them over line, it's got to be good. Like, they have to like it, they have to read it, or else they won't stay. They might watch two or three of your videos, but the churn will be very high. Mm-hmm. And so you can't market a bad product. You can undermarket a good one, but you really can't overmarket a bad one.
Yeah, that's a good point. Then you've got here the gig economy for brains is exploding and has only accelerated under the world post, we'll call it Cerveza sickness.
Yes. It's funny you say that, because our tweet included that phrase in the preview. And when we first put it out, it was throttled by Twitter because it had that word in it. And that itself is testimony to where we are on our journey of freedom. The gig economy for brains is just another way of saying that we are decentralizing entertainment and education. YouTube is a fabulous platform. I've watched videos about how to change the oil on my new garden tractor.
Yeah.
And I could find the exact model.
Right.
You know, I bought a used garden tractor and I could go and find the exact model on YouTube. And there's somebody making a video teaching me how to change the oil in the fuel filter and the air filter. And this is how this thing comes off. And it's amazing. Okay. And it's all out there and it's free. But at the same time, it is a massive change in the way in which people are consuming, creating, being entertaining. And if we're not careful, it's a sort of it's a reset opportunity for the powers that be to take away some of the freedoms. So
let's go into this next portion I've got highlighted. Mm-hmm. YouTube keeps an incredible 45% of ad money, leaving 55% to the creator. And you contrast this with Substack that only takes 10%. And just to be clear, Substack is really a platform that's exclusive to the written word, or do they have videos? Help me understand that, because I'm not familiar with Substack.
Yeah, Substack is started as predominantly the written word. It was a place for former reporters at newspapers that were struggling. You know, the newspaper industry has been decimated. This was a place where if you were a reporter, you could go and do reporting and your readers could directly support you and cut out the big corporate, you know, middlemen and the private equity firms above them that were squeezing the cash out of reporting. It has since grown to be basically, you know, a better version of Medium, and that anybody can go on Substack and create a blog. It's got a phenomenal platform for writers. And it's got a phenomenal back office payment system with Stripe. It's all handled very easily. The really most important thing about Substack is they give you the emails and the payment systems. You own that as a creator. Mm. So every day I could download all of the people that have subscribed to us and the analytics around each of those emails. And I could take that away if I wanted to leave Substack, and they would let you.
Oh, that's great.
So it's nothing more than a platform for writers, but also now they've also expanded to audio, and you could do podcasts. You can push podcasts out to your email subscribers via the Substack platform. It's not great. You wouldn't like it, but it exists. There's some strengths and weaknesses from Substack. We're very close to some of the employees there. They've reached out to us because of some of our—
Where are they headquartered?
Success. I don't know, actually, to be honest with you. The person that we interact with the most is based in Toronto.
Okay.
But each field, like, for example, we are categorized as a finance blog. Each of the verticals within Substack gets assigned a professional to help them build their community,
teach them
best practice. They really want to build. And here's what they're striving to do, which is to build the same moat that YouTube has built, which is they want to have the most. So the most important thing Substack provides content creators is they make it very easy for people to pay you. Once you have your credit card as a reader on the Substack platform, you can click any other blog that you want to pay to subscribe to, and it's one click and you're in.
Yeah. So it's like iTunes.
Right. So they have a critical mass of paying subscribers. The whole ecosystem of Substack is, you know, that eventually writers go behind the paywall, and that if you're on Substack, you're eventually probably going to have to pay. So it takes away some of the anxiety and awkwardness of going to paid. But they just announced a couple of weeks ago that they crossed 1 million paying subscriptions on the platform.
How are they on censorship?
Very, very lenient on censorship. You have community guidelines to follow.
Yeah.
But because this is the big thing we talk about in this piece, which if you go down to the next part of it, which is the difference between YouTube and Substack is YouTube runs an ad-driven business. Substack.
Do you want me to stop at this chart right here? Keep going.
You can go down a little bit. We can talk about that chart in a second.
Okay.
Go up a little bit. Yeah, sorry. Go up slightly above the chart. Here you go. The fact that it's an ad-driven business. Well, go up one more a little bit here. So this is my first time doing this, and we just published it today. It must be down, but it doesn't matter. When you are subject to an ads-based business, you are susceptible to cancellation.
Right.
Because Coca-Cola might not want to be next to—
Right.
Whereas with Substack, this is the ultimate democratization. It is
individual. It's from the users themselves.
Correct.
Got it.
Individual users deciding to pay for individual creators. And because of that, you get to keep upwards of 85% of that revenue versus what YouTube does. So YouTube is a phenomenal platform that is a valuable channel partner for creators, but it's also an expensive one. It's expensive monetarily and creatively. Because you have to always have in the back of your mind that you could be canceled if you say the wrong thing.
What is the discovery mechanism like on Substack? So as an example, I just went to my YouTube channel, if I post a video, I would say, you know, sometimes 50, even 60% of the people that watch that video could be individuals that do not subscribe to my channel, because YouTube is going to put that out on their homepage or in their suggestion feed, something like that. How does that work with Substack?
It doesn't, which is a weakness of the platform, but also potentially a strength because it can't be manipulated.
It
is incumbent upon the creator to do their own marketing.
Okay.
Which is why we are out there creating a completely separate platform, which is our Twitter account, at Doomberg T, so that we can drive traffic to our Substack, and also so that we can diversify like you had to, if for some reason we ever lost access to Substack. The only real risk that I see for creators on Substack vis-a-vis censorship is if the payment processors decide to selectively not process payments for certain Substack.
Like Stripe, right.
Like Stripe. So Glenn Greenwald's on Substack. He's probably the number one Substack on the platform for revenue. Alex Berenson is on Substack. Chris Hirons is on Substack. But like, talk about controversial people that would have their Twitter accounts deleted.
Mm.
Many, many people that have had their Twitter accounts deleted have Substacks, and their audience came over with them.
Oh, now, that's good.
And because that still exists, you know, I don't know how long that will be, quote unquote, allowed in our society. So the biggest risk is payment processors. The second biggest risk in our minds is Substack changes its policies. Because they could. Once they reach critical mass, they could begin to act more like YouTube.
Right.
We don't anticipate that they will. It's their brand mission. That would destroy the brand.
Going back to what we were talking about earlier. Yeah. So this is, I think, in the article, and I just wanted to highlight this chart of the YouTube worldwide advertising revenue.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So keep in mind that content creators, although it's not the majority, they are getting 45% of an ever-increasing pie. Yeah. So you definitely want to diversify, you don't want to have all your eggs in the YouTube basket, so to speak. It is a great way to go out there and start creating content. And what I was talking to Mike Dillard about this yesterday, that video will go live probably next week. But we were talking about why it's so important for people to start creating content, not just to move the needle as far as promoting freedom, liberty, and the message of free market capitalism, or maybe free speech, a lack of censorship, but also to give yourself some leverage. So if you're at your job and they come in and say, hey, you need to do something, whatever it is that you don't want to do. Let's say it's a mandate or whatever. Who knows what we'll see in the future.
Yeah.
That will give you the leverage to say, you know what, I'm making a couple grand a month on Substack. If I did it full time, I could probably put that up to 4 or 5. That's going to cover me. And that's going to give me some leverage to just tell my boss to pound sand.
Yeah. And that chart is quarterly, I should point out. So 7 billion a quarter.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's 25, 28, 30 billion a year. You'd multiply that by 2. The value that creators are creating on the YouTube platform is approaching $60 billion a year.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. And YouTube is grabbing a big chunk of it. I mean, let's be honest. They do a lot, but also, again, as a creator, you have to be mindful that you depend on the ads and not being canceled. Whereas,
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for. So I think you get into this down here. You reference my channel, but if you were starting from scratch, because you don't want to spread yourself too thin, then you're not creating as much content, but what platforms would you use and try to grow at the same time to give yourself enough diversification?
So for us, we did start from scratch, and the two we chose, given the fact that we were predominantly written and visual, we do a lot of photoshopping and charts. We decided that the two platforms that would be ideal for the content we were passionate about creating were Twitter and Substack.
Right.
And those are the two outlets. And, you know, if we ever did go behind the paywall, we would kind of view Twitter as our free offering, where we would make threads of some of the pieces after we published them. It would also sort of be the entry of our funnel where people could find us. We would, you know, the thing about creating a marketing strategy as a content creator is, you know, you have different levels of supporters. You have a Twitter follower, you have an email subscriber, you may have a paying customer, and then you may have different bands of paying customers. The two most important things are, one, you must create a lot of value at each node.
Right.
So, and then the second is, there ought to be a reason for people to climb up that ladder. Hey, I like this person on Twitter. I see they're referencing this Substack. It's behind a paywall. Maybe I'll go and try it for a month and see if I like it. That's sort of the classic funnel marketing technique. You could do that without being gimmicky. So if you are creating a ton of value for your free Twitter followers, then what can they complain about? They're getting something for nothing.
Yeah. And guys, just so you're following here, what I do for my own channel is obviously everything I do is free. But then if you're interested in joining Rebel Capitalist Pro, that's basically $100 a month. Or if you're interested in going to Rebel Capitalist Live, that's going to be $600 or $700. So yeah, that's kind of my upsell, if you will, and how I really monetize the channel. And I prefer to do that than put all these ads in the middle and do all that stuff because I don't want to disrupt the flow. And I just want to give out as much content as I possibly can for free. And then if you want to do these additional things, then great, you have that option.
Sure. And everybody has their own approach for that. There's sort of different strategies that work for different people. And it matters which market you're in. You know, the finance world has a little more capacity to pay because many of the people consuming your content work at institutions who cover the cost of their subscriptions. So it's different than sort of other genres where maybe it's more broadly oriented towards the general public.
Merchandise would be an example.
Yeah, exactly. Merchandise is incredibly hard to do. We're going to put a thread out tomorrow explaining why we're not going to do merchandising. Mm. It's with all the supply chain issues, it's just incredibly challenging to get.
I didn't think about that.
And so we would rather not risk the brand again. So, you know, the first rule of branding is don't you always protect the brand.
And to be clear, Doomberg, your blog or on Substack, it's not just about how to build and create content.
No.
It's really more about macro, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a finance oriented blog with an energy science bend. We are trained scientists that write it. We've had decades in heavy industry. We write a lot about oil, about natural gas, about renewables, about energy policy, about global warming and how to solve it, about nuclear energy, crypto. Sometimes it's tangentially related to, but anything that's sort of trending in the FinTwit community that catches our interest. You know, the subtitle of the Doomberg Substack is Chicken Little Gets a Terminal.
as in a Bloomberg terminal.
Bloomberg terminal. And you'll notice that the chicken colors are sort of look like the Bloomberg keyboard. That's not an ant. That's not a coincidence. And so many of the people that we target on Wall Street, for example, would have a Bloomberg terminal, would know those colors, recognize the charts. And so we built a brand. The icon of our brand is for our targeted audience, which is also very important for new creators. Know who your audience is. And in fact, before we started Doomberg, we did a couple of things. One of the things is we wrote the character sketch of the green chicken. Who is the green chicken? The green chicken is, you know, funny without being silly. The green chicken, teaches without being too, you know, self-indulgent. The green chicken is provocative without being polarizing. Mm-hmm. And so then who is the ideal client? Well, the ideal client has spent 15 years on Wall Street, or the ideal client runs their own personal trading account, or the ideal client is somebody who's just interested in the markets and learning about what's going on and likes to have a different viewpoint. We are sort of contrarian, but also we do try to educate. So if you're not learning at least one thing from every Doomberg piece we put out, we failed.
All right. Let's go and take some calls here. I think we've got a couple people in queue, and I think a couple of our listeners who have their own channels, and see if they've got some direct questions. Yeah, let's bring on our sir. What is your name?
Hey, this is Mitchell.
Hi, Mitchell. You're on with Doomberg. Do you have any questions or comments about creating content?
Awesome. Yeah, I kind of had a question about what both of your views are on just being a content creator as an asset to be able to, you know, work from anywhere, leave the country if you need to, something that could, you know, supplement your plan B.
Yeah, right.
Just a way to, you know, be able to still work, but have the freedom to leave or go anywhere you want, really.
And yeah, I mean, I'll address that initially and just by my own story. Mm-hmm. I started my YouTube channel in Medellin, Colombia, and we were doing it out of one of my rental units down there. And even during the lockdown in March 2020, I was still able to produce these videos. And, you know, at the beginning, all my editors and my thumbnail gal and everyone that worked for me would come into the apartment every day. But then when the Cerveza sickness hit, they were all working remotely. So we had to figure out how I could shoot the videos, get them the content, they could edit it, put it together, and then put it up onto the YouTube channel to make it live. And we could kind of, you know, everyone could be in their own house, but yet work on the same project at the same time and still get the job done. Right. And then from Medellin, if you guys know my story.
Yeah.
I was just looking for any type of freedom or sanity for that matter back in 2020. So my good friend Hugh Hendry lives in St. Bart's, and he said, hey, everything's open here. So I got my way over to St. Bart's. And if you've ever been there, it's not a big place. You can drive from one side of the island to the other in about 15 minutes. Right. There's about 5,000 people. And wow. I just had this this little, and the Wi-Fi is horrible, by the way. And I just had this little teeny Airbnb that was maybe, I don't know, 500 square feet or something like that. But I went to believe it or not, they had a little art shop there for kids, and they had a little whiteboard. So I bought a whiteboard, and I was still, and I had all my, not all, but a lot of my camera gear in a duffel bag that I took with me. And so I was still continuing to do the interviews on the George Gammon channel and actually do whiteboard videos. And then I went to Arizona. Then I've been to, you know, I've did the RV tour. I've done, now I'm in Kiyosaki's office. And, you know, I've done this stuff from pretty much not everywhere on the planet, but I could have if I wanted to. And by the way, the one video that I have that has the most amount of views to this day was a video I shot in that little 500 square foot Airbnb in St. Bart's with just horrible lighting, horrible audio. And I was just basically sitting down like this with the whiteboard, like kind of holding it almost on this little coffee stand right next to me. So hopefully that answers your question. And in the interim, I've been able to grow the business. I don't look at this as a business, but I think you should. Mm-hmm. If I was, I'm doing it for a purpose, as you guys know.
Right.
But if I were looking at this as a business, I've been able to grow that side of it to where I could live, you know, pretty comfortably on the revenue that was being generated. And I would not have to worry about employment or a job. And it's something that I could continue to do regardless of whether I went back to Medellin or went to Florida. As long as you got an internet connection, you can make it happen.
Right. Yeah.
Only thing I would add to that, George, is you pointed out something that we think about a lot, which is there can't be anybody that you don't fully trust on the critical path of your production part of your creation.
You're right.
The content creation business. You know, if there's a skill you need to learn, learn it. If there's, you know, the more people that you have that are required to get your content out, the more risk you're taking on that somebody might get sick or they might get into, you know, a dispute with you and walk off the job. And so we try really hard to learn the skills ourselves that we need. We might not always do it, but at least we know how to.
Yeah. You know, it's just like when people ask me about real estate investing and I tell them that the best thing to do is just go out and buy a single family rental property and manage it yourself for it's like 6 months. And now that's not your long-term game plan. But the only reason you're doing that is to understand how it works. So when you do hire a property manager, you can know if that property manager is good or bad. You can know if they're giving you value or they're ripping you off because you've kind of gone through the motions yourself, and then you can kind of scale from there.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, I was actually watching a video today, one of Kiyosaki's videos today on that right there. He was talking with Grant Cardone, and he was talking about just if you don't, you know, get your feet wet and just start doing something, and kind of a video, what you were saying the other day, like you just have to do, you start and
that's
do,
right.
You know, that's the best way to learn. You know, I also have another question if I have time.
Yeah, quickly, please.
Okay. Gotcha. Do you guys now, both of you, did you both learn how to edit videos and do all of the, you know, all the everything that comes with content creation. Did you guys learn to do that on your own, or was it more of like you had a team and you were, and your team was helping you with all the content creation?
Yeah, so I had quite a bit of an edge there because I produced a TV show prior to starting the YouTube channel, in which I had to hire editors. I was the executive producer, but I was also the director, and I was also in the show. So I was there micromanaging the editors that I did hire from day one, and we did an entire season of that TV show, and I just transitioned that same group from doing the show into the YouTube channel. So I had a huge edge there right from the beginning. But when I did the TV show, I didn't learn the actual software, but I was there with the editors, I mean, 24/7, basically.
And the Substack is much simpler. So, you know, it's the written word with some Photoshops and some good charts from a Bloomberg terminal. This is our brand. And we had known all those things because it's what we do in our regular business and our consulting firm. So it was quite a natural shift for us as well. But the broader point is, if there's a critical skill, you should certainly learn it. You might not have to do it, but you should know how.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate all you're doing.
Thanks. Absolutely. Have a good day, and thanks for the call. Okay, do you have time for another one, Mr. Doomberg?
I have all day for you, George.
All right, Josh, do we have another caller? Hey! Hey! From Canada. And yes. Doomberg, this gentleman has started his own channel, and he talks about some macroeconomic topics. And what questions do you have for Doomberg?
Yeah, so this is something as well, which I could recommend to any small content creators as well, is I just started my first newsletter, actually. I put it out yesterday.
Right.
So this stuff is awesome to hear. But I did it to give to the first 1,000 people who were on board at the very beginning. Very cool. Because obviously, you know, when you start a channel up and everything like that, I didn't expect it to grow as fast as it did. And I think part of that was the niche that I had, because it, and I think that is so key as well, because I actually have another channel which has way more subscribers than the channel that I'm focused on right now.
Yeah.
And that channel used to be like about moving to Canada and everything like that. And obviously with everything that happened, I decided to start my own channel. And as a day trader and everything like that, I used my experience on psychology and probabilities and everything like that to do the contrarian view on the real estate market in Canada, which is just nobody talks about that. And I saw a complete nobody talking about that. And I thought, that's where I'm going to get into. But my main question was, does Substack have like the same analytics as YouTube has, like on the back end, where you can go in, see how long viewers are looking at your newsletter and everything like that? Because that is so helpful.
Like an audience retention graph.
Exactly.
That's a great question. They have fantastic analytics. I'm unfamiliar with what YouTube offers, but I can tell you that the analytics offered by Substack are phenomenal. In fact, they have an algorithm that rates each of your emailers for their engagement. And so you can craft directed, you know, one of the skills we have on the board to learn in 2022 is, because, you know, Substack does manage the emailing for us. It's very simple. You just hit publish and it goes out to, in our case, our 16,000 email subscribers. We would like to learn the sort of MailChimp type software and become experts in it, because you can customize and say, I only want to send this to my 4-star readers who are highly engaged, or my 3-star readers that are kind of engaged but might slip off, etc. And they each piece, I'm going to pull it up right now as I'm talking to you. So for example, we know open rates. Let me just get you the stats that they give you for the emails. Each email you get, deliveries, opens, open rate, how that piece led to subscribers, the paid subscribers, which ones they read it. If I go and download my emails, which I'll do right now as I'm talking to you, let's just get the subscribers. The columns in the subscribers include their activity, subscription date, comments in the last 7 days, comments in the last 30 days, shares, email opens. All these are 7 days all time and 30 days. unique email seen, web post views, subscriptions gifted, days active, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's pretty phenomenal. And we use it all the time. We do a full download every Monday morning. And we look at what percent cancellations did we have in the past week? What's our 28-day running growth rate of email subscribers? Maybe we put a piece out that annoyed some people and we got a lot of cancellations. Well, what was that? And is that something we should do in the future? Right. So it's a pretty phenomenal set of analytics that have worked very, very well for us. Having said that, I don't know how deep and thorough the YouTube analytics are. George can comment on that, of course. But
Maybe I missed it. Do they have something that tells you how long the viewer was reading or at which point they clicked off? Like, let's say I looked at your article about the niches.
No.
The riches are in the niches.
They don't
and
have
can
that.
It tell you if I read the entire article or if I only read half of it?
No, it tells us if you read it, how many times you read it, if you forwarded it, et cetera. So one of the things it also does, if let's say we were behind the paywall, we're not, and I should be clear, Doomberg is 100% free for now. If you do go behind the paywall and somebody's forwarding your paid article 200 times, you could know who that email is. And you could send them a polite note and say, hey, we're always happy to let people see, you know, a version of Doomberg, but this is our content. Please respect it. Don't forward it so often or something like
right.
that. It's pretty good. I would guess it's not as good as YouTube. And I don't know that in the blog world, watch rate as it is in sort of YouTube is as important. And so the real matter that the thing that drives differentiation that we think a lot about is open rate of the emails, which they measure very carefully.
Yeah.
And,
so,
so
that's basically your click-through rate in, in YouTube. Yeah. So that's all to do, you know, before recording, you're talking about how important a title is. And for a YouTube video, that would be title and thumbnail.
Yes, exactly. And thumbnail is really important for us too. Here's the strategy for the Doomberg team. If it's a variable we can change, we want to learn how to optimize it. What is the best title? What is the best thumbnail? What is the best phrase under the thumbnail that's customized for Twitter when we tweet it? How do we manage our Twitter account to get maximum exposure? These are all solved problems. You could research them. You can learn from others. And one of the things we've done, which is really fantastic, and that's why I really love coming on this show today, and kudos to you, George, for doing it, is we've reached out to dozens and dozens of content creators, and all but one or two have gotten back to us and are happy to share best practices and what works for you, what doesn't work, what do you think about this approach? And people are in the content creator community are very open about sharing, and we try to share everything we learned. We do it in this piece, the work of my life piece for November. It's an open book on how Doomberg is doing. Here's our growth rate. Here's how much we grew on Twitter, on Substack. Here's our total views growth. And so we've been very honest and transparent with people that, you know, this is going to be the work of our lives. In our ideal world, the Doomberg would be the only thing we do. It's not there yet. We might not ever get there. What a thrill it would be to wake up every day and only get to do the thing you love to do the most in the world. We love to write, to analyze, to communicate, to explain. I love being on Twitter. We love the marketing. I love being a guest on podcasts. If we could just do that all day and make that literally the work of our lives, it would be like winning the lottery, not financially, but from a happiness perspective. So,
yeah, while affecting change. Just think about that, guys, for a moment. So all of those are benefits, but also, let's just fast forward 20 or 30 years, and let's just assume that we are able to get off the slippery slope towards authoritarianism that we're on right now. And not only did you create this content, not only did you build a brand, not only did you give yourself some to supplement your income or maybe a complete income, but you know, 20, 30 years from now, looking back on what happened in the 2020s, that you had an impact and you played a role in getting the United States or potentially the world off this road to serfdom, that you played a part in that. And it reminds me of my father. You know, he was 92 years old when he passed away in 2005, and he flew planes in World War II. And toward his latter years, whenever he would go to the VA hospital or even walking around town, he would always wear this blue kind of corduroy hat with all of his pins, that he, you know, or some of them that he got for flying planes in World War II. He had a lot of medals and whatnot. He got shot down 3 times. But he was extraordinarily proud of those pins and those medals. And I think that if you guys are participating in this movement towards freedom and liberty and free market capitalism, that you're going to be just as proud in 20 or 30 years looking back on today.
That's an important point. Our kids read our blog, and we know that they read our blog, and we want our kids to be proud of the blog that we produce.
All right, caller. Well, I appreciate the phone in and your comments, and keep it up, man. I'm sure we'll talk to you soon here over the next few days.
Thanks, George.
All right. Have a good one. All right, guys. Well, Doomberg, that was awesome. I appreciate your time. Can't wait to do it again. For all the people on the live chat, if you could remind them where they can check out your Substack.
Absolutely. Doomberg.substack.com. And on Twitter, we are at DoombergT. Those are our only two social media properties. That's going to be our focus. And it's free. The emails, email subscriptions are free. You could read it without subscribing. We would like it if you did. But it's all the content's free today. And it is the work of our lives. And George, thank you very much for having me on this. I love this platform and what you're trying to do. And to the extent that any of the pieces that Doomberg puts out helps other content creators, and that's sort of consistent with our mission as well. So appreciate the opportunity, and happy to do it anytime you'll have us back on.
That's great. And guys, just remember, if we can do it, you can do it. Remember to always stand up for freedom, for liberty, and free market capitalism.